You're listening to Ark Bell, Somewhere in Time, on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from September 22nd, 1997.
Now, back to Boris Said. And Boris, let's proceed with these photographs. The next shot shows this, I guess your cameraman, rappelling down the side of this incredible cavern that goes nowhere.
Right.
And I was thinking, here I am going to Egypt next week. I'm not going to do that.
Maybe I should stop you for a minute there, Art, because those are the two pictures that we basically took and we've talked about, because we didn't want people to know where this place really was that we'd found, because we hadn't found it scientifically. It had been a legend. It had been something we sort of stumbled on.
All right.
The rest of the pictures are absolutely accurate and depict what's going on, but I thought maybe at this juncture I should tell you why I'm suddenly talking about all this after 2 years of silence and why the need for secrecy in the first place.
Well, let's proceed. We'll get to that in a minute.
Okay.
Let's proceed with your story. I mean, here you were going down this rickety metal ladder into into a well.
Yeah. And when we got to the bottom, now this is 1992, in the dark, I had brought a rubber flashlight and a mask with me, and I brushed away some of the muck and slime that was on top of the water, and lo and behold, it was as clear as Perrier under there. And much, I think, to my guide's horror, I went in the water.
You jumped in the water?
I went in very gingerly because of all of the sediment that it aroused. And I dove down, took a couple of deep breaths, and sure enough, to the right or to the east of where we were standing, I had a compass with me,
yes,
was what looked to be a pile of stones. Now, you remember the legend, right? They piled some stones up over the tunnel to protect the dead and covered over the top of the sarcophagus and got out.
In other words, these two little kids scared to death, they had disturbed a sacred area, piled the rocks. Okay, yes.
There were clearly some signs of disturbed stones down there in the bottom of that well. And I just filed that knowledge away, and we went on, and we did our film, and we left, and so forth and so on. And now the scene shifts, and we're back in 1996. And I said, when it turned out that we were not going to be allowed to drill a hole down into the room.
Right.
And when it turned out we weren't going to be able to dig down into the tunnel at the back of the Sphinx, I said to Tom DeBecky, our radar guy, listen, what happens if we can get this radar of yours down 100 feet below the surface?
Mm.
Will it operate? He said, of course. And I said, well, let me go show you this well. So we went in the well, and I guess DeBecky was not with us in November when I did this. What I did was I took Danley down there in November.
Okay.
And we went down into the bottom of that well, and lo and behold, the water had receded about 15 feet.
Ah.
And there were two sarcophagi in an intermediate level of the shaft. When you descend that shaft, there is a one level about 80 feet down, and then you go down another 40 or 50 feet to the bottom. And at the 80 foot level, there were two disturbed stone sarcophagi, outer casings, with the sarcophagus missing.
Huh.
And there was also an old iron pump, and there was, you know, that obviously stuff had gone on there. But I had not seen that on my first trip in 1992, so clearly something had been taken down, a wall or something. They had done some exploration, because when I went down in 92, it was just a well shaft without this sort of second tier.
So they'd been in there since.
Yes. Uh-huh. Now, when we got to the bottom, there was quite a lot of ground. There was a lot of water left, but there was an awful lot of space that hadn't been there before. And there were a couple of bones, obviously human bones, a femur. There were some little bits of faience. There were clearly some 90-degree angles and so forth and so on. It was obviously had been a chamber of some sort.
Yes.
So when I got back, I said to Dr. Shore, look, I think we should take the radar down there and see what's down there. And this now, we're at the end of 1996, at the end of the November expedition. And this is where the whole thing started to come apart. Now, again,
if I might, let's finish up with the photographs. There is now a third photograph of several gentlemen One with a laptop computer, but you're
in this. That's Tom DeBecky. That's our seismic expert.
All right. All right. That's Mr. DeBecky.
We are down in the well chamber with the radar.
To me, it looks like a gigantic cavern.
Yes, except that it's got some right angles. It's got, when you're down there, there's clearly some walls. There are some steps cut out of one wall. There are some right angles and some what look to be collapsed columns.
Okay. Indeed.
It is not a natural cavern.
And then there is one final photograph, right. Perhaps the most intriguing of all, and I can't exactly tell what I'm looking at here. It looks like some sort of sarcophagus.
Well, what happened was when we went down in November, when we went down in February, when we went back, and this is the expedition we got to talk about later, in clearing a level area to put our tripod. I mean, it's like the old story. It sounds corny when you say it, but we were setting our tripod up so that we could do a sweep of the room with the cine camera.
Right.
And the more we made an area flat, the flatter it got until we realized it was, in fact, a flat piece of stone. And when we took some of the water and washed it off, it turned out that it was polished black granite. And when we cleaned it off some more, the edges were beveled, and it was clearly the lid of a sarcophagus.
Clearly, that's what it is.
Clearly, there's no question that that's what it is.
I imagine at this point you're feeling like Indiana Jones.
Yes. I mean, we were beside ourselves, and so we immediately sort of wired Mr. DeBecky up. We had a like a bosun's chair to make it a little easier to get down. And we sent Mr. DeBecky and his equipment and his son down into that chamber and turned the radar on, and lo and behold, there was no sarcophagus under the lid. And the lid is almost 2.5 feet thick, according to Mr. DeBecky. It's colossally thick. We did a minimum of digging. It was illegal to dig. We didn't want to do any digging. We didn't want to upset anybody. So we had the radar, and he said the thing is more than half a meter thick.
Uh-huh.
What he did find under this sarcophagus lid was a 2.5 meter wide, quote, anomaly, unquote, with a domed ceiling.
What? A 2.5 meter
wide, like a tunnel. He said that it was impossible for it to be a natural anomaly because it was, quote, steeply dipping, unquote. I'm quoting Tom DeBecky now, steeply dipping. It descended at an angle of about 25 degrees. It started out about 2.5 meters below the sarcophagus lid and descended directly in the direction of the Sphinx, 275 yards away.
Headed right for the Sphinx.
Yes, it is 2.5 meters wide, and it has a domed ceiling.
All right, so in other words, if I'm guessing, and I talked to you earlier about this, you said they frequently would use sarcophagus lids to hide things.
Well, now, this is according to our good friend and scientific consultant, Dr. Jim Hertog, who was with us from the Academy of Future Science. He said that in the ancient texts there were a lot of references to the fact that in those days, because there was no such thing as grave robbers, they would often conceal a sacred chamber or a secret tunnel or something by putting what looked to be a sarcophagus there so that nobody would think of disturbing it.
In those days, it certainly would have worked.
That's right. So certainly it fit the legend of the story. I mean, if it can be, how old, I had a line in my script, how old does the story have to be before it becomes a legend? It clearly fit the story that I'd been told 6 years before about that area.
Uh-huh.
And as far as I was concerned, that was all the proof I needed. And I went to Dr. Shore and I said, look, why don't we ask Dr. Hawaz to come down here and look at this? And perhaps we can persuade him to do a test with the radar where we know that there's a tunnel.
Wouldn't you be worried that Dr. Hawass would come down there and look at the digging, albeit minor, that you had done and flip out?
Well, we actually sort of covered it over. I mean, the digging we did was not more than 3 or 4 inches. I mean, we really didn't do any. We just cleaned off the lid.
Uh-huh.
I mean, that was covered over every night, and, you know, that was not an excavation. I mean, that was something we did with our hands and with screwdrivers, and, you know, it wasn't an excavation. But again, you got to understand, my relationship with Dr. Hawaz has been very straightforward. He has denied me almost nothing in the past 2 years, has been very forthright with me, has allowed us to film even up above the King's Chamber, which is, of course, the subject of the Hoagland Tunnel. And so I didn't want to have I didn't want to get on the wrong side of the Egyptians.
Of course not.
But that's when it hit the fan, because that's when we found out some extraordinary stuff. At that point, when we went to the inspector and said, look, we'd like you to look at this radar test. We'd like to do a comparative test somewhere where you know there's a tunnel.
Sure.
And then compare that tunnel with the tunnel we've shown you. And then we'd like you to please dig under this lid, because the ground has already been disturbed. And it's 275 yards from the Sphinx, and we think we can do it with picks and shovels.
So at this point, you were proposing, well, you proposed radar study first, followed by digging.
Yeah, I was asking Dr. Hawaz to dig a hole into the tunnel.
Uh-huh.
Now, at that point, it all came apart. It turned out, to my horror, and I tell you, I never thought I was this naive, but apparently Dr. Shore's permit to explore had been revoked at the end of 1996. We are now in February of 1997.
Uh-huh. So you're operating on a revoked permit.
We are operating on my permit to film. Apparently the Egyptians had given me permission to go down and finish my film. And they had been told by the Shore Foundation that none of the equipment was going to be working, that we were just filming it.
Why had Shore's permit not been renewed or extended?
I don't know specifically, but there are two or three different stories. One is that all the permits were revoked because of all the trouble with Hancock and Bival and West.
Yes.
I know for a fact, because I saw it, that there was a day in which Dr. Shore was engaged in doing a little illicit digging behind the stela in front of the Sphinx, and I believe that one of the inspectors saw it, put a very quick stop to it. Again, I was there and saw it, and, you know, I don't want to categorize it either way, because you can't dig 35 feet through solid rock with a chisel, but he certainly was digging, and they certainly saw it. I don't know why they revoked his permit. I don't know why he didn't tell me they revoked his permit. But I can tell you that Garrett Griffin, my director, and I were down there in that well with all our photographic equipment, and we were illegal, and we were flabbergasted.
So at this point, it might be reasonable. Mr. Shore certainly knew his permit had been revoked.
Of course.
So, or expired, not renewed, whatever the case. And so it might be reasonable to presume that Dr. Shore, with you already there, was going to let you proceed as far as you could proceed before they stopped you.
Exactly.
Sure. Okay.
Now, what I did subsequent to that, and it's a matter of record, was I delivered a letter to Dr. Hawaz in which I gave him my word that I didn't know that we had no permission, and offered him that footage. I said, this footage will not be released, publicized, or made use of in any way by anyone without your specific written permission to do so.
Mm-hmm.
And I offered to give him the footage, because you know, I've been in Egypt for 10 years, and I was appalled that this had happened and we didn't know about it.
Right.
Now, at that point, you know, we're sitting in a bar that night, Garrett and I, and we're putting this whole story together, and I don't know if this is the appropriate time or not to tell you this, but I mean, this was when I began to think that we had at one point a working relationship with Graham Hancock and Robert Bovall, and we were using some of their footage in our original promo, in fact.
Mm-hmm.
And then apparently they refused to sign a secrecy pledge. And
everybody needs to know, everything at this point was extremely secret. You weren't making any public statements at all.
Because we had agreed not to.
Refusing all interviews.
For scientific purposes, until we knew where we were. That was my pledge to Dr. Shore.
Right.
But as far as I'm concerned, all bets were off when I found out that we were operating on my permit.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I got in trouble because I, at one point, and I think it came out on your show, I asked my friend Richard Hoagland, I told him that if we did in fact get permission to open the tunnel, I'd invite him to be my guest there.
As a matter of fact, I too was tentatively, and I remember talking to you.
Yep.
And you said, "Oh yes, we'd like to have you and Richard come over."
Absolutely. We didn't want. I didn't want any. I'm trying to sell a television show.
Uh huh.
And I didn't see any need for secrecy. But you know, in retrospect, it's 2020 hindsight, right? It's I began to realize what had happened. What you should know, Art, at this point probably, is that in February, before we ever left on this ill-fated trip, we had a meeting with at Fox Network, and we had been negotiating with Fox to air the show. We've been negotiating in good faith with them for about 3 months. And when we showed up at the final meeting, which was the week before we were to come to Egypt in February, Fox presented us with a contract, a 54-page contract, which had half a dozen paragraphs in it that basically took total control of everything away from me, took control of the script, of the content, of the subject matter, of everything. It basically made the film a work for hire and gave control to Fox. The payment that we were going to get was going to compensate Shore almost completely for all the money he'd put in. And my partners and I were going to wind up with one-third of half of the net profits. And as you know, in Hollywood,
sure,
there ain't no net, ever. So it could have been 150% of the net profits.
It wouldn't make any difference. Zero,
right.
Zero.
Now, at that point, I have to tell you, Art, we were not in this thing for the money. I mean, we'd never really been in it for the money, because with the kind of work that's involved here, you could make three films. So it wasn't like we were holding out for a better deal. I didn't want to sign the contract because the film was 90% in the can, and I didn't see any reason to allow anybody to
take editorial content.
That's right, because I was afraid that it would wind up another Geraldo's vault, where they would not use the stuff in the pyramid, the sonic stuff, or any of that good stuff, and it would just become a treasure hunt. So I wouldn't sign the
call. Toll free 1-800-618-8255,
and basically, you know, sell out, I guess, my other investors. I at the time, I probably should have thought a lot more about it than I did, but I just said no, and that was the end of that. And I figured, well, it's a disagreement between two associates.
So let's just say he allegedly made some offers to you to try to get you to go ahead with this deal.
That's right.
All right.
And I wouldn't do it because, again, there wasn't that much money in it. It wasn't that big a bonanza anyway. And we were so close to the truth that I couldn't see any reason, any justification for not keeping control of what we said.
So you said, no way.
I'm not signing this contract.
All right.
And we went in February on that, under those circumstances. What I did not know was that Shore's permit had been canceled.
You still at that point didn't know?
I didn't know that. That was before we went down in the well. This occurred a week before we went over, when we made our famous descent into the well and discovered the sarcophagus.
All right.
So now, apparently what Shore had told the Egyptians, and I can only surmise this, was that we had to come over because we had a deal with Fox and we had to finish the film.
All right. On that note, stop right there. We'll take a good break and we'll be right back. All right? All right. Bora Said is my guest. You're hearing the inside story of the Shore expedition, what they hope to find, how it all fell apart, and we'll talk about where we go from here, and we'll back up a little bit when we come back, because I've got a surprise for Boris. From the high deserts. No pyramids here that I know about, but you never really know what may lie under the ground. You know, all those mounds. This is Coast to Coast AM, and we will be right back.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring a replay of Coast to Coast AM from September 22nd, 1997.
Surely miss your tender kiss.